Shavuot world, and today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf kuf chof chet, and we are holding. We had to finish a little bit before the end because we were holding a little bit late, and we got up to the machlokas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, which starts here with the two dots nishchata habeva. And just to remind you, in the Mishnah we learned that we have a machlokas according to Rabbi Meir. So then there's a hechsher of the aver or the baser that was meduldal, and that hechsher for tuma comes because of the dam of the shkita of the same animal. Mashenki Rabbi Shimon says no, there's no hechsher b'shkita, not with the dam b'shkita. Now remember that we had before the sugya in which, according to Rabbi Shimon, the shechita itself is what's machshir and not the dam. So a lot of the discussion over here is going to be sort of ignoring that obvious reason for Rabbi Shimon to say that if the shechita is the only thing that's machshir and the dam isn't machshir, then it would be dependent on whether the shechita was affecting the aver. So Tosis tries to match all of the shitas here, except for the last one. And we're going to have six different explanations of what the machlokas is. So except for the last one, Tosis tries to fit it into the shita of Rabbi Shimon about shechita machsheret velo da, by simply saying that the Gemara is ignoring the details and assuming that if lamaisa the Avraham Adulda was considered to be part of the animal, then it would be part of it, legabe, not only the dam of Shechita, but also the actual event of Shechita. That's not possible to say in the end. And as we'll see, the truth is that the main discussion is to define the Shechita of Rabbi Meir and to talk about what Rabbi Shimon would hold in theory if it wouldn't be for the fact that anyway, he doesn't hold that dam isn't Marshit. So let's take the six different explanations of the machlokas of the between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon as to whether the dam was machshir, the aver, or actually it's rather the baser, and therefore they would be mekabel tuma. So what would be the machlokas? Why does Rabbi Shimon hold they're not ready to be mekabel tuma? So we might come in for it. So here's the first explanation. Amar Rabba, look, it's very simple. In order for the Aver HaMeduldo to have Dam of Shechita on, how did the Aver HaMeduldo get Dam of Shechita on? I mean, the Aver HaMeduldo may be a rear lake somewhere. I mean, like, how can you possibly say the Aver HaMeduldo is going to be Mukshar by the Shechita? Because if you hold that, remember that a Yad is Yad not only for Tuma, but there was the shita before that yad is also yad lehechsher, just like there's a yad letuma. So now that would mean that if we could view the actual body of the behema as being an extension, a yad to the part that was actually hanging loose, it was meduldal, so then the fact that the blood fell on the yad would be the equivalent of the blood falling on the Avraham meduldal. So maybe that's the machlokas. Can you view an entire body as being a yad for one little aver that's meduldal? That's sort of weird. So the question is, does a yad have to be like the lesser important in of the mixed over here? Or can the yad be even the main animal? And now it's functioning as a yad to the tiny piece that's hanging loose. Maybe that's the machlokas. So Rabbi Shimon holds, I mean, it's not reasonable to view the entire animal as a yad to the aver, and therefore the dam, or the shechita, according to Rabbi Shimon, would not affect the aver just because it affected the body. Those two things are not accessible one from the other. That would be a simple explanation. According to Rabbi Meir, Mar Sofar, Behima could be nasid yad to the aver. Okay, here is number two, Abaye. Abaye says, it could be the old question about whether Ochez Bekaton Ve'en Gadol Imo Oleimo. Remember we had the discussion before about whether if something, we talked about this agave challah, like a mishnah, is it considered to be a whole challah? If there's a deep cut in the challah, as the Rebbe likes to make, and then if you pick up the end of the challah that was cut off, it would pull off. You couldn't pull off the rest of the challah with it. Does he still have lecha mishnah? That's the question. So if you hold it, if you pull up the small piece, the big piece won't come up with it. It's not considered to be attached anymore. Then that would be the difference. Over here, if you try to pick up the animal with the Eivra HaMedudal, you'll just pull the Eivra HaMedudal off, obviously. Try to pick up a cow with a loose leg. I mean, forget it. You remember, we're talking about an Eivra that's dangling with like a small piece of tissue that's holding it. So maybe that's the machlokas. Rabbi Meir holds that Ochez Bikaton, the Ein Gadol Olemo, it still would have a din of being one thing. And it's a Rehu Kamohu. It's all considered to be attached. Whereas Rabbi Shimon would hold, Mar Savar Eino Kamo. So it's therefore, it can't be a yad because it's not attached. The Af Rabbi Yochanan Savar, the Ochez Bekaton Vein Gadol Oleimo Kamiflegit. Rabbi Yochanan holds the same thing, that essentially, this must be the machlokas. We see that because Rabbi Yochanan himself had to answer what he thought was a problem in Rabbi Meir contradicting himself. And it was only a contradiction based on an assumption that the machlokas was referring to this issue, whether a piece that you pick up that doesn't pick up the other piece, if it's the smaller piece, can it be considered to be mechuber? So we see that Rabbi Yochanan holds that that was the machlokas. How do we see that? Because Rabbi Yochanan held that there's a major contradiction here in Rabbi Meir himself. Rabbi Yochanan, Rami the Rabbi Meir, or the Rabbi Meir? Did Rabbi Meir really say over here, Harmi Amar Rabbi Meir Ochez Bikaton, Ve'ein Gadol Ole Imo, Hareyu Kamohu? Okay, so obviously Rabbi Yochanan holds that that's precisely what Rabbi Yochanan said, right? So it's clear that Rabbi Yochanan is understanding the machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda exactly the same way that Abaye did. But the problem is that there's another psak of Rabbi Meir that says the opposite. And that was on the Mishnah Tful Yom, where it says, Ochel shenifras umu'rebe miksat. There it's talking about truma. So it says over there that if you have, let's say, a challah of truma, and it broke, but it was still a little bit attached, and the din was that, according to Rabbi Meir, that only in the event that if you would try to pick it up with a smaller piece of challah, that the bigger piece would come up with it, then and only then is it going to be the same as the challah itself. So if somebody touches it, the tfu yom, and it's truma, so a tfu yom who touches truma is going to be metameit. And if not, so then it's not going to end up being tummy. So here Rabbi Yochanan says, look at Rabbi Meir. When our Mishnah, we saw that Rabbi Meir held, it didn't matter whether it'll pick up the bigger piece. And over here he says, that's the determinant factor. So how do you explain that? So I'm a Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, look, this over here, what Rabbi Meir is saying over here is, in fact, a different shita of Rabbi Meir. It's Muchlefet HaShita. Maybe that's because it's referring Dafka to Tvul Yom, as we'll see discussion later on. But the point is that Rabbi Yochanan had to point out that Rabbi Meir there is not consistent with Rabbi Meir here. And that is only meaningful, obviously, if we understand the machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon to be a function of exactly that issue. Something that is going to be the smaller part of the broken challah. And if you pull it up, it's going to just break off. Okay? So it's clear that Rabbi Yochanan and Abaye have the same understanding of the machlokas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so first explanation is that it's a question of whether yad makes sense about the whole animal just for an aver. Second way of understanding it is whether something is considered to be a chibur if it doesn't have enough connectivity to be able to pull up the other part. Okay, by the way, why understand why Rabbi Meir was so concerned about this? I mean, isn't it obvious that there's a difference between the two cases? Remember that Mishnah was in Tfu Yom. Remember all the cases that we had in Masechet Tfu Yom, where over there we said, and this din is only true about a Tfu Yom because a Tfu Yom has a weaker tumah. Remember? So maybe that's why over here, Rabbi Meir is saying, look, we could be Mekel if it's not such a strong connection. So then it's a weaker tumah, Tfu Yom, and we're not going to be Machmer, but maybe Enochinami, where he's talking about other types of real tumah. So there, where it wasn't Nechlash by going to the mikveh already, maybe it would be Machmer. Why are you making this a problem? My kushya, Dilma Shani Leila Rabbi Meir ben Tfu Yom Lashar Tumas, says the Gemara, no, you can't say that. Because in the Braita, Rebbe says that there's no difference in this halacha. Echad Tfu Yom v'echad Shar Tumas is exactly considered to be the same in this din. So that can't be the answer. Okay, so maybe Rebbe Meir doesn't agree with Rebbe. I don't understand. If you see that Rebbe Meir is saying something different, and it makes perfectly good sense if the difference would be because of Tfu Yom, so then who cares what Rebbe said? Rebbe's entitled to his opinion, and Rebbe Meir's entitled to his opinion. So Dilma le Rebbe lo shani lev le Rebbe Meir is shani lev. What makes Rebbe Yochanan say that it's a contradiction in Rebbe Meir, and there's a difference here with Rebbe Meir? Rebbe Yoshi, of course, that's not what Rebbe Yochanan meant. Rebbe Yochanan was saying that assuming that Rebbe is right, that then we'd have to say Muchlefet HaShita, but I'm not saying that Rebbe is right. Obviously, it could be Rebbe Meir himself is saying that based on the fact that it's Tfu Yom, it has a more kal definition of what's considered to be a chibur. Okay, so that gives us two explanations. Now let's take a look at yet another explanation. Rava Amar. The machlokas may very well be about whether there is such a thing as yad la'akshar. I mean, we had a machlokas about that, right? So why can't this be an expression of that exact machlokas? The yesh yad la'tumah, the ein yad la'akshar kabifladei. Mar savar yesh yad la'tumah, the yesh yad la'akshar, the ein yad la'akshar. So Rabbi Shimon holds, it's all very nice to call it a yad, but there is no yad for akshar. So how in the world would the dam hashchita, or as Tosis explained, the actual act of shchita, be able to make it tameh in this case? Because that would be the equivalent of heksher, the act of shchita. So it shouldn't be able to work with a yad. Umar savar yesh yad l'tumah v'l'akshar. Rabbi Meir holds, this is not a problem. You can be makshir the entire animal, despite the fact that the blood didn't fall on that part of the animal because it's through yad. Okay, great. Three explanations. Let's take a look now at the fourth explanation. Rav Papa Amar, there's a fascinating question over here. Be'etzem, you did not think about giving this piece to a goy until after it was actually shechted. So, and the question over here was, you're trying to tell me that it's considered to be an actual foodstuff, and it's a foodstuff because you decided to give it to a goy. But when did you decide to give it to a goy? You decided to give it to a goy actually when it was too late, because the heksher of the shechita took place first, and at that point you had not yet decided to give it to the goy. So how could it be makshir something that wasn't yet an ochel? You can't be makshir in advance, can you? So if you can't be makshir in advance, how's it going to be makabel tumah? And maybe that's the machlokas. Can you be makshir in advance or can you not? D'tanya, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, kachoy Rabbi Akiva shoneh. Rabbi Akiva taught us that chelev shchuta b'kfarim tzarich machshava ve'ein tzarich hechsher. You've got chelev in a small town. So over there, since large towns always have crazies that will eat anything. Okay, so there you don't need a specific machshava that you're going to eat this. But in a kfar, this is something that people are not going to be eating unless it's a specific kavana that we want to use this as food. So the chelev in a kfar would actually need machshava before it would be mekabel tuma, but it wouldn't need hechsher because it was already hechsher before. Now, if it already hechsher before, then that means that even though it took place before the kavana to use it for food, it was still a good enough hechsher. So I said, says Rabbi Yehuda, I said to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, limadatenu rabenu, you said to us, and you translated that here, this ulshin, if we translate it as endives, which is the way that it's brought in certain places, it's endive in the Oruch. Okay, so whatever the ulshin are, so ulshin shaliktan. So you took these ulshin out of the field, you washed them off in order to use as animal feed. Then you decided that actually, upon rethinking it, I think maybe I'll eat it myself. It needs a new heksher before it's going to be makabel tuma. That's what you told us. Because since at the time that it was washed off with a kavana for an animal, and therefore it wasn't yet an eichel, so the washing it off is not considered to be a heksher of eichlin. So how come you're telling us now that the chalev was already mukhsher b'shchita, if at the time of the shchita, it wasn't considered to be a foodstuff in a kvar? And you said you needed another hechsher. And Rabbi Akiva said, you know what, you're right, I forgot. And chazar Rabbi Akiva l'yotshenek Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Akiva said, you're absolutely right. And it has to be considered to be an eichlin before it's able to be makabel tuma. Okay, so obviously there is a serious issue about whether things can be makabel hechsher before they're even considered to be food. So Rabbi Meir holds the way Rabbi Akiva said it over lechatchila, that it doesn't matter because in the case of the chalev, it was already mukhsher before it became a food, and that's fine. That was his original opinion. And Marsa from Ashinka Rabbi Shimon, he holds the way that Rabbi Akiva, he holds like Rabbi Akiva was made at the Rabbi Yehuda, and he took it back. So Marsa Lavaki Chazara, so that would be the machlokas, whether in this case, since the Aver Hamiduldo and the Basar Hamiduldo only got wet with the dam at the time of the Shechita, and at that point there was no any kavana to give it to a goy yet, and therefore it doesn't matter because I hold, and like the original pshat in Rabbi Akiva, Mashenka, Rabbi Shimon says no, Rabbi Akiva changed his mind, and actually it is not going to work because of that. Okay, so that would be yet another way of understanding the machlokas. Okay, so we've got our first approach, which was Rabba's approach. Question is whether it's reasonable to say a large animal body would be a yad for a small piece that's hanging loose. And that's the machlokas. Abaye learned the second shot. And he says it's talking about a question, the same question that we have about a challah. Is the challah considered to be whole, or is it considered to be broken? If it's not going to be erches bekatan, and the gadol won't be oila with it. That was the machlokas over here, and we saw that Rabbi Yochanan also holds that that's the machlokas. Then we had the third approach, which was Rabbi Meir. And that, sorry, no, one second, I'm getting mixed up. That was all included in that. Then we had Rava's pshat, whether yesh yad yetuma or and lehechsher, ein yad lehechsher. So that was very straightforward. Then we had the fourth pshat was Rav Papa, whether hechsher can be done before machshava, or it has to be done only after machshava. Okay, so those are our four pshatim so far. We now have yet another pshat. Ravach Breder of Ika Amar. The question over here is, if the dam had been wiped off of the behema between the shechita of one siman and the other siman, then the question is, if it wasn't there at the end of the Maisa Shechita, was it actually considered to have been there as the Dam Shechita? Because if it's not Dam Shechita, then it's just considered to be Dam of a Makkah, and a Dam of a Makkah is not Makshir. It has to be, remember, dam chalalim yishteh, so it's only the dam of an actual shechita. And therefore, the machlokas is the old machlokas we had back in the first parak. And Rabbi Meir holds yeshna l'shechita metchila v'atzof. So the shechita, when it's completed, is considered to have been an act of shechita from the beginning through the end. And because of that, the whole thing was dam shechita. Hi, dam shechita, even though what I took off, I took it off before. Whereas Marsa, Rabbi Shimon holds, no, it's only considered to be shechita at the end. And therefore, the dam that was wiped off over here is the stam. It's considered to be dam maka because I didn't complete the shechita with that original dam there. That's number five. Number six, Rav Ashi says, the machlokas is gufa, whether shechita is makshir or whether the dam is makshir. So Rabbi Meir holds the shechita is makshir, and because of that, the shechita was effective even for the Avraham Adulda. Mashenkin Rabbi Shimon says, no, only a shechita, which is a shechita that is ru'uya. So therefore it has to be, remember this is Rabbi Shimon's shechita all over. So if it's not considered to be a shechita ru'uya, and shechita is what's makshir, and not the dam, so since this shechita is not a shechita ru'uya because it cannot be matir, and because of this, the Avraham Adulto can never be matirid, so because of that, it also cannot be makshirid. Wow. Boy, Rabba, this is all very nice, Lagabe, these six explanations. So this part about can an animal be the whole body, can be a yad for the Avraham, I have another interesting question. Can the living body be a yad for the Aver? If you hold that the animal's shechita is good for the Aver, forget about a case where we shechted the animal. Can you consider the living animal to also be a yad? And therefore, the question would be over here, whether if you were makshir, let's say you actually use water, right? And now the water went onto the animal, living animal. Would that be makshir, the dangling leg, or not? Or were you only talking about a shechted animal? I don't know information. So once we raised this question about an interesting situation as to whether, so we've got this all, one of the original questions was what constitutes a yad in the case where you have a whole body and an Avraham Adulto. Because of that, we went to ask what constitutes a yad on a living animal with an Avraham Adulto. Now, that means we've already opened up the question about situations where it's not at all clear that something could function as a yad. Because of that, we've got a bunch of other issues that are similar, and all of them end up being tekus. So we want to put together the cases where we're misupik, whether it's appropriate to call a case like that a yad. So let's take a look at some of the fascinating cases. They're all very, very different, but they share this question that they are partially roy to be mekabel tumas erchlin or tuma, which we'll see, and partially not. And the question is that partial, which is similar in some ways to the Avraham Adulto, is that considered to be yad? And each one is different. We'll see the issues that each one raises. Okay, what about the interesting case that we had in the Mishnah in Uksin, where you planted a kishut in a atzitz that was eno nakuf, into a flower pot. Now, when you put something into a flower pot that does not have a hole in it, so at that point, it's not considered to be mechuber to the karka. If it's an edible thing, and it's not considered connected to the earth, so then it can be mekabel tuma, right? Now, the moment that you would put a hole in it, of course, at that moment, it would be considered to be mechuber, and it couldn't be tummy, even if it had been tummy before, it would have lost its tuma, because connection to the ground is an equivalent to tefillah. So, if you plant the kishut, maybe if Rabbi Barnea is here, I think we've lost his connection. No, there he is. Do you remember we kept talking about that quiche that we discovered what it is? It was something that was cucumber-ish, but it wasn't really a cucumber. I keep asking you every time, and I keep forgetting. Do you remember what that was, Barnea?
Zucchini?
Huh?
Zucchini?
No. Barnea, do you remember?
No, it had a unique name. I don't remember.
It was a funny name. I can't remember right now. Okay, but it's something like a cucumber. It looks like a cucumber. People mix up with cucumbers. Anyway, and it kept growing. And it grew so big that the upper part started growing outside of the pot. And it's now hanging over the actual open ground. Now, that part that's hanging over the open ground is now absorbing nourishment through the air of the open ground. It's the equivalent of growing in a pot that has a hole in it. So now it becomes tahora, says the Tanna Kamma. So it's the same as putting a hole in the pot. Now it becomes tahora. Well, Rabbi Shimon, I understand. What would be the reason that we could be mitayer only because some of it is growing outside, that now makes the entire thing like as if it's attached to the ground? I mean, only that part that's growing outside is connected to the ground. I say the part that was tameh before remains tameh. You weren't mitayer it because you added other parts, and the new part, it remains tahor. Now, this is a curious situation. So we've got one thing in which parts of it are shayach to Kabbalas Tumah, and parts of it are not shayach to Kabbalas Tumah, right? So now Abaye says, okay, here's another interesting case about yodais. So according to Rabbi Shimon, if the part that's in the pot would not have been mekabel Tumah, so now can the other part that is over the ground, and it itself is not shayach to be tameh, but can it be a yad to bring tumah to the part that's in the pot? So here too, we have an interesting question as to whether the yad has to be able to be just as vulnerable to tumah in order to become a yad, or that's irrelevant. It's a yad because it's attached. Take it. Another question. Rabbi Yirmiyah, I got another interesting question. How about a guy that really goes in for Halloween big time? And when he sees the great pumpkin, what he does is he bows down to the great pumpkin. Oh my gosh, almost happened to poor Peanuts. So he goes and bows down to the great pumpkin, but he only has in mind to bow down to the face of the great pumpkin. The other part he still wants to eat, you know? So now the question is, if he was a mishtachavet to half a pumpkin, so he made it usser because now something that is an avodah becomes usser v'hana'ah. So now, according to, if we're saying something which was usser v'hana'ah, so we're going to see later on that if he something is usser v'hana'ah, then it's not shaykh to be mekabel tumas ochre because his shita is only oichlin shata yachol achirim, only things that are kosher for someone, a goy, a Jew, but at least you need to be able to give it to a goy. And if it's usher ba'anah, no, you can't do anything with it. And therefore, it's not mekabel tumah. So here we've got another perfect example. Something that is completely unable to be mekabel tumah. Can it be a yad to the other half? But there's two different ways of understanding this, because if you're talking about the part that is actually the food, we wouldn't have, probably wouldn't have been that it can't be mekabel tumah. This could be talking about in both directions, because the question would be, the simple question would be, if I touch the back half of the great pumpkin, will it be metame me because of the front half of the great pumpkin, which is now either tame a machlokas, how what kind of tumah it's considered to have? Is it similar to a mace? Because we call it Zivchei Beitim. Is it considered to be tse, kimo davas, would have a din of a nida, tumas nida? Now, those are tumas derabanan that the rabbanan would gezer on avodah zara. So now the question is, would the back end be able to transmit that tumah? Or the alternative is whether the front end, because the truth is, it's only a tumah derabanan. And the question over here is, would it be shaykh to actually make it really tame, because if it touches something, it would be matame erchlin midiraisa. So then it would it be able to give over that tuma through the front end of the great pumpkin? Okay, Rashi brings both of these possibilities. Okay, this was also a teiku. Another case which is similar, Omer of Papa. Well, look, we know in the Mishnah Noksin, which we talked about before, that if a branch of a fig tree, so if it like cracked off, it just has like a little bit of bark that's connecting it to the rest of the tree. So it was nifshach, and it's still morebically pata. It's attached by a piece of bark. So Rabbi Yehuda says that all of the fruit on that branch is still not shaykh to be mekabel tuma because it's viewed as actually still being mechuber. As the Chachamim Omri, it depends whether it could actually end up healing. So im yachovich yo tahar, so you tie this back onto the trunk, will it grow back or not? If it can grow back, so then it's considered to be attached. But if it can't grow back, it's not considered to be attached. So therefore, the question over here is, according to the Chachamim, what would be if it is itself actually the branch could not be mekabel tuma because it could grow back? Could it be a yad for another branch that could be mekabel tuma because it would not grow back? Would it be able to bring tuma to it? This is the same basic question. Something which is itself not vulnerable to tuma, can it serve as a yad to some other part of it that is vulnerable to tuma? This is yet a different version of the same issue, and of course it too is a teiku. Another similar question. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Harei Amru. Now remember that there's two different dinim in a bayit hamenuga. There's two different stages. The first stage is called chalitza. So over there, if after the 7 days it still is there, and these are the complicated halakas where we have to learn out of shavako and ubako, and that there's actually three different times. But in any event, the first stage will always be to de-plaster, you have to remove the plaster from the house, and you have to take out any parts of the wall that are made of stones that have tzaras on them. So that's called chalitza. Now imagine a situation where you have a row house. You have one house that's connected to the other, and it was very common, if you have a house connected to the other, that at the corner they would utilize very large stone that would go through to provide stronger stability. It would grow through from one house to the other. And that stone was affected by tzaras, but only on one of the neighbor's side. Now, when you do the chalitza, which is the deplastering and removing any affected stones, you have to take out everything. But if it turns out that then the tzaras comes back, then you have to do nititza. And nititza is you have to tear down the whole house. Well, if you tear down the whole house, you only tear down your own house. You don't have to get rid of the stone that had tzaras on it. You just need to destroy the house. So over there, you destroy the house by cutting through this stone and leaving the part of it that wasn't affected because it wasn't in your house. And there is meniach et shel chavero. So you only destroy the part of the house that's yours. So here, too, we have a stone, which part of it is shayach to tumas tzaras, and part of it is not. So the question is, by Rabbi Zeira, another beautiful question about can the part that doesn't have tzaras, can it actually be a yad, and that would bring the tuma of the tzaras into the neighbor's house? So what would be the din about that? It would be like haba el habayit. Take, I don't know, there too. It's a question of whether someone would walk into the neighbor's house, as long as that stone was there, mechubar, whether that would be a yad into the house. Okay, that concludes those issues of the strange cases of how far we would take yad. So that was the main theme of today's daf. Then The Mishnah made a statement which we've found many times, and we've explained it many times over and over. Here is the point where the Gemara wants to actually find the mukkar to these special dinim, namely that the basar of an animal that died, even the basar, kezayas basar, is going to be metame ben avel. But the basar of a kezayit, that has a kezayit from an Avram and Achai, even though the Avram and Achai in itself is metame the tumas nevelas, but a piece of meat from it, even of a kezayit, will not be metame tumas nevelas. You remember how many times we've had this. Every time that a Mishnah says it's metame ke Avram and Achai, but not like a nevela, not ke Avram and a nevela, that's the difference. So here we finally get to the place where we derive these halachas. Ask the Gemara. You said that if the animal dies without shechita, so then the aver is an aver min achai, but not an aver min avela. According to Rabbi Meir, what's the difference between an aver min achai and an aver of an avela if both of them are metame in exactly the same way? They're metame b'magu b'masa. I don't understand. Ah, there's a big difference. Ige b'nayu. Basar haporesh mimenu. The difference is if you cut off a piece of meat. So if you cut off a piece of meat from Avram and Achai, a kizayit, the ilu basar haporesh mi Avram and Achai, that's not going to be metame because it's no longer an aver. But if you cut off a piece of meat from an avela, then if it was taken off of an Avram and an avela, it would be metame because it doesn't have to be an aver anymore. It just has to be a kezayis basar of nevela. What's the mukkar in the Torah for this? So Avram and Achai, how do we even know that an Avram and Achai is metame like a nevela? Like, where do we get that idea from with law? I mean, the Torah only talked about v'chiyamut min ha-behima, no? So what's the pasuk? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, it's a brilliant pasuk. It says v'chiyamut min ha-behima. Ha-ha! That means if a part of an animal dies, how does a part of an animal dies? Because if you cut off an aver from an animal, so basically that aver is, for all intents and purposes, equivalent of death. And therefore, even a part, a mina beima, can actually constitute the same tuma. And everything that the Torah was saying about the literal chiyamut mina beima, but the whole beima dies, is said on the mina beima, where the aver dies. Wait a second. How could Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav say that? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav was the source of a completely different halach that we learned from that pasuk. We've had this halach in Chulin so many times. That's the din that a treifa that was shechted is not metame. That's where we learned it from, don't you remember? And it was the same Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav that said that drasha. So how can all of a sudden Rav Yehuda Amar Rav turn around and use the same pasuk for something entirely different? Don't we need this to teach me the halacha that we learned from Rav Yehuda Amar Rav? The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, some say it was even a braita. The chiyamut min ha-behima, that's the pasuk we're talking about. From there we learn only some dead animals are metame. And some dead animals are not metame, because it says it's yamud mina beima. There are certain animals. What does that tell me? Miktsat beima metama. Miktsat beima not metama. Well, what kind of animal that's inedible and dead would not be metame? A treifash that you shechted. Zu treifash shechata. This is the mocker that even though shechita is not matir treifah lachila, it is matir, the treifa from Tumas Nevelas, and that it's based on exactly min ha-behima. It's the same pasuk. How can you use it for both things? Because if it only was coming to tell me that a treifa is not metame, it didn't have to say min ha-behima, which means like it's totally cut off from the behima. It only needed to say mi behima. Mi behima means out of the conceptual concept of behima. But mina behima means it's physically disconnected from the animal. So therefore, shema mina tartes. You see two different things. Eva min achai mina behima. Trefa shkuta mi behima. which could have been said. And therefore, there's two levels of this drush. Lovely, no? Anyway, says the Gemara, but wait a minute. If you're learning it from the word mina beima, why wouldn't that include even basar? Basar is mina beima, and the basar is certainly incapable of living, so it's basically an avela. It was kiyomut mina beima. No way. No way. The bright actually goes out of its way to say that. The Tanya, you might have thought, you might think that Boser is the same as Avram and Achai. Talmud Lomar, v'chiyomut mina beima. What that means is that whatever it is that we're learning out that died, it has to be similar to the actual beima. It's got to be part of at least that set of things that would be called a beima. Now, a beima is actually the death of an animal, chiyomut. It has to be the same misa. The misa of an animal is so far irreversible, and it's a permanent state. And just like mitash, you know, it's a chalipin, there's no way to cure death. So then only things that have no cure, of course, you know, it's a chalipin, anything that would not regenerate. If something can be regenerated, then it's not considered to be the equivalent of mace. And basar can be regenerated. And this is the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Rabbi Akiva Aymer, it's because it says behema, and the behema has to be more than what you said. I say the behema has to also consist of gidim, ha'atzamot. Now, there's different bones in an animal, and there's different gidim in the animal. So then only things that have gidim ve'atzamot, but not just basar. Rebbe says, no, it's more than that. A behema has basar gidim ve'atzamot, and therefore anything that's going to have the din of the tuma of Avram and Achai has to have basar gidim ve'atzamot. So I'm like, what's the difference here? You make it sound like there's major differences. There are major differences. What would be the difference between the way Rebbe is learning and Rebbe Akiva? I mean, if the issue were only what we were looking at, is an Avram and Achai Tamei, but Basar and Achai is Tahar. Okay, I mean, both Rebbe and Rebbe Akiva are explaining perfectly well why Basar and Achai would not be Metamei. What's the difference whether it's Basar, but if Basar Gidim Vatsama, I swear, I don't care, it's all the same thing. Not true. There's a big difference. Because there's a part of an animal, it does not have any Basar on it. And what is that? As we saw before, that's the Arkuva. So that's the bottom of the underneath the hoof, the whole piece that's actually the foot. That, if you look at it, doesn't have any basar on it whatsoever. And it only has, obviously it has lots of connecting sinew, because you got to move all those complicated bones, but it doesn't have any meat on it at all. All you see is like skin directly on the bone. You look at the bottom of the animal's leg. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, if you would cut that off, it would be Mitame, because it has Gidim Vatsamais, even though it doesn't have Basar. Mashenken Rebbe added that it needs to have also Basar Gidim Vatsamais. Well, this doesn't qualify. It doesn't have, and therefore it's not going to be Mitame. It's a major difference. And what about between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Haglili? What would be the difference? Big difference. For instance, suppose you remove a kidney. The animal is not going to regrow a kidney. Okay, so then that would mean that, according to Rabbi Yossi Haglili, anything that doesn't regenerate is considered to be mitame, because it's mina beima. According to Rabbi Akiva, they don't have any bones or lips. Lips never regenerate. And therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, they are not going to be mitame because there's no atzamais. Hashem can only be Rabbi Yossi Haglili, they will. So we have very important differences in halacha between these different approaches. Tanya Nabi Gabi Shrotzim Kai Gavna. It's interesting. that we have exactly the same diyukim with the same essential wording in the pasuk in the sugya of shrotzim, which is also nevela, but it's a particular type of nevela, like nivlat hashrotzim, which has a certain chumra, namely, it's metame b'ka'adasha. But it also has a kula, namely, it's not metame b'masa. The Torah never mentions masa in the tumah of nivlat hashrotzim. So we find exactly the same limut. You might think that if you have just meat from a sheretz that is alive. No, Talmud Amar bimotam, ma mitah sheino asechavipin, of course sheino asechavipin. So it compares it to death, and that is that it does not regenerate. So says Rabbi Zekulili. Rabbi Akiva says, it says over here, sheretz, specifically. And a sheretz consists of gidim and atzamot. Therefore, it has to have gidim and atzamot. And Rebbe says, well, that's not the only thing that a sheretz has. It also has basar. So, ma sheretz basar gidim atzamot, avkol basar gidim atzamot. And there, too, the bright to ask the same question. My ika bein Rebbe and Rebbe Akiva. So, Ben Rabbi, the Rabbi Akiva, same issue. If the lower part of the leg, which never has basar on it in these animals, so then it would actually be metame. According to Rabbi, it doesn't have basar. It only has gidim atzamot. It will not be metame. Between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosi Aglili, same idea. If you remove a kidney, according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili, well, it doesn't regenerate? No. So then, okay, since it's metame. According to Rabbi Akiva, don't they have atzomites? No. So they're not metame. So we have exactly the same sugya by shrotzim that we had by nevela. Can you tell me why we needed to have two separate limudim from the pasuk? Can't we learn one out from the other? And it's exactly the same thing. So, Petzrich says the Gemara, no, it's not exactly the same thing. And we actually need both of these limudim. Why? Because Yashmina Behema, the Torah only told us the case of Nivlas Behema. Would have said, you know why Nivlas Behema is not Mitame Basar Mechaim? Because it's not so chomor like a sheretz. It's not Mitame Bekaadasha. It only is Mitame Bekizayit. But a sheretz, oh my gosh, the Torah is so more machmer on shratzim that it's even going to be metame just if it has a tiny little amount, like one lentil. So maybe the Torah is also machmer in this other way, that if the shear is so small, maybe it would be metame, even basar min hachai. So emel tami mechayim. Therefore, I need the same limud to tell me that basar min hachai on shrotzim is not metame. Now, what about the other way around? Well, if you would have told me exactly this thing by sheretz, I would have said, you know what? Maybe sheretz is not metame because sheretz is not metame b'masa. So therefore, mishum d'lo metame b'masa. The Torah never mentions masa in tumah shrot. So if it's not metame b'masa, so maybe that's the reason that it's not metame mechayim. Masha'in kein behema, which has the chumra being metame b'masa, ema t'tame mechayim. Therefore, I need to have both limudim, one for behema and one for sheretz. Now, question is whether we have the same din about when you have the machshava. So turn around, buddy. You cut off a kizayit of basar from an aver min hachai, and then you decided you're going to give it to a goy to eat. So at that point, it would be tahar. In other words, tahar means it's not going to be mekabel tuma. Not only is it not tuma itself, it's tar means it's tar from any kind of tuma. Because remember, basar that's taken from an avram and achai is not metame. And also, since the basar was taken off before he had an intention to feed it to the goy, it was never mekabel tuma because it wasn't a foodstuff yet. But what if you decide to feed it to a goy while it is still attached to the Evrim and Achai, and then you cut it off? So if Chishevala first, the Acharka Chatachol, then it actually would be Tame. Why? Because it was Mekabel Tuma from the part of itself that was an Aver Menachai. So it was originally a part of an Aver Menachai, so it remains Tame, at least the Tumas Ochlin. Now, Rav Asi hadn't gone to the Beis HaMedrash on the day that they were learning this circuit. So anyway, he comes the next day, and he meets Rabbi Zera, and he says to Rabbi Zera, so what did you talk about in the Beis HaMedrash? Rabbi Zera said to him, listen here, I'm not going to tell you over everything that we learned at the Beis HaMedrash. You tell me what you're bothered by, and then I can tell you whether we addressed it. Why do you expect me to sit here all day? So you tell me what your problem is, and then I'll tell you whether we talked about it. No? You go first. So my kashalach, what's bothering you? So Rav Asi says to him, well, this halacha, that if you had a machshava, and then you cut it off, it would become tameh. If you had a machshava to feed it to a goy, and then you cut it off, it was already tameh. Why in the world would it be tameh? Tumat beit hastarimi. This is a classic example. Remember, we had this discussion before, that this is the contact of the piece of meat with the aver is in the part that is sliced. But that part is considered to be beit hastarim. Remember? How did it? It didn't touch anything that can give off tuma, because tuma can only be given off on the surface, can't be given off from an area that's hidden. And tuma beit hastarim lo matame. Ooh, said Rabbi Zera, that is a good question. I didn't understand that either, I got to tell you the truth. And awfully did he, casually. So I went and asked Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo if he could explain it to me. And he said, yes, this is the same Rabbi Meir who said before, all the way back in Dafayin Beis, he said before in the sugya where we had the Uber had stuck out its hand and you cut off the hand. Now the question was whether it was Makabel Tuma or not, is the rest of the Uber, is it considered to be Tame because it touched the Tuma of the Aver that was sticking out, and that was considered to be the Trefa that wasn't going to ever be kosher. Anyway, Rabbi Meir said over there that is the type of Tuma space of storm, which is Matame, so we said over there, because as you're cutting it, there's always a little bit of connection. We'll go more into the sugya tomorrow. We have run out of time, but we did pretty good, Baruch Hashem. And we've got still a little bit that needs to be explained, how Tumat Beit HaSfarim is given over. But nonetheless, we've learned a lot of Prate Dinim and a lot of possible reviews of so many different areas that would have bearing on whether the Shrita, the Dama Shrita, would be Matame, even Nevram Adulto, what is considered to be a Yad, many different possibilities of the Machlokas. We had Mamer, six different explanations of the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda.